This is Publishing Talks, a podcast about the book industry. I'm David Wilk, your host, and today I have the pleasure of talking to Matt Kavnar of Vook, which is spelled V-O-O-K. I'm sure most people who are listening have heard of Vook. Matt, maybe you could talk a little bit about your role at Vook, how you got there, and maybe a little bit, then we can talk a little bit about the company and just sort of use that as a background to start.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it. So my name is Matt Kavnar. I'm the VP of Business Development and a founding employee at Vook. What's Vook? We're a cloud-based e-publishing platform. And what that means is our goal is to make it as easy to create a great-looking e-book as it is to create a blog or a website in something like WordPress. So we allow you to come in, take your files, build an e-book, add video and audio elements and images, style the ebook with special styling so it looks unique, make sure everything is clean and looks great, and then automatically distribute it out to Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and iBooks, as well as Kobo here coming soon, and then track your sales with the daily dashboard. So kind of a publishing house in a box, everything you'd need a big publishing institution to do. We put those tools at your fingertips.
Now, and so this leads me to many questions, but it, just about Vook to start with, that is not how Vook began, though. What the history of Vook is, you've been in business for at least now, what, almost 3 years, right? Or is it longer?
Yeah, 3 years. Good point. We've been around for 3 years now. I've been here since before the beginning. And we began life entirely focused as a enhanced digital publisher, which means we went out, we found video, we found great writers, we paired up writers and filmmakers and created these video enhanced ebooks. And this was, 2009, and you'd be surprised that ebooks, even back then, the technology was so primitive. And to make a video enhanced ebook, it just took a tremendous amount of hand coding and engineering. But we figured out how to do it. Our goal was always, we had a mantra of the company, one ebook, 10 ebooks, 100, 1,000, 10,000, and keep going. Now, what we realized was that if we want to get to that vision of a million ebooks out there in the world, we are not going to be able to do it ourselves. We, as a team, don't scale. But in the course of the next 2 years, up until the beginning of 2011, we built over 800 titles. We worked with over 100 partners, most of the major publishers. We worked with technology companies like Google. We worked with NBC. We worked with individual authors like Seth Godin and Deepak Chopra. And we made great ebooks for them, and we found out how to do this. And while we were building these enhanced and standard ebooks, we were institutionalizing everything we learned. So we were always moving towards this goal. What's the goal? Well, in January 2011, we really committed to it. It was take all of our pain and suffering, because believe me, it's painful and difficult to build ebooks. Take all that pain and suffering and do what I call weaponize it in our platform. So all through last year, we built this platform. We built the user interface. We built a smooth user experience. And in late December, early December of last year, we started our private beta. We got hundreds of people in there using it, refined it. And March 26th of this year, we opened the gates to the world. And now anyone can come to book.com or gone, start building an ebook. And really what they're doing is they're reaping the fruits of our incredible frustration of 2 years of trying to build these things and all the solutions we've come up with.
Well, so let me ask you another question, because it makes perfect sense as you describe it. However, when you did describe it a minute ago, it sounded, when you say the you, I think immediately of, let's say, I'm an author and I can publish my own ebook using your tools. As you alluded to, WordPress is a really good comparison, or maybe Pressbooks, Hugh McGuire's business.
Yeah.
In Montreal, where you're providing tools for not necessarily an individual author, but could be, someone who has the need to publish an ebook, who may not be a formal publisher. But I assume that you are also making this available. In fact, I know you're making it available to publishers as well. And when you do that, I presume then, let's say I am a publisher, I already have my distribution set up, I don't need you to distribute my files to Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Kobo, and Apple. I'll do my own. But you do allow for that. In other words, I can just use your tool set,
Oh, yeah.
build my tools, export them to my e-distributor, and take them away.
Absolutely. We for everybody actually use our tool. We'll send you when you're done building, we send you an email. It has your files optimized for Amazon, VN, and iBooks, and you can hit another button to automatically distribute through us. If you've got a subscription plan, we don't take any percent of your royalty, so it's almost irrelevant to us which way you want to go. That's the advantage of working with everybody and being in this game for so long, is we knew all the things people wanted. Some people want to distribute through us. Some people don't want to do that. For some people, they have to distribute through us. For others, it's critical that they don't. So we just allow all of those different user behaviors.
And so, again, I don't want to make this all about Vook, although I think what you're doing is really interesting. But just to, continue a little bit talking about what you're doing and the tools you're building, you're working, is it principally or exclusively with what we call, for want of a better term, enhanced ebooks? In other words, Vook is optimized if you want to add audio, video. Or if you're doing fixed page layout illustrated books, is that correct?
Yeah, we're still, there's two things. First of all, we do video and audio. You can just drag and drop it into the platform. It works really easily. When we first put video in, people reacted against it pretty strongly, but we found for non-fiction, self-help, instructional content, it's actually a great solution. And so we've got people flock. We thought everybody would just come to do standard ebooks, but actually tons, thousands of people have come looking to do video enhanced ebooks. So maybe we'll see more video enhanced ebooks out there now that Book makes it easier. Other platforms do too. And then we're working on getting a solution for fixed layout to do these more laid out design style content. So
Got it.
that's something.
So I've really conflated two things. What I should have said is that what you're doing, or what you've clarified, is that your model is reflowable enhanced books currently,
Right.
with the coming soon the enhanced
Coming soon.
fixed page layout. And of course we know, and we don't want to,
Absolutely.
we don't need to get into too many details about this because it may change over time, and people might be listening to this, months after it's recorded, but not all devices that are available as of today, we're now in May of 2012, not all devices support the audio video capabilities that you can put into an ebook. So I presume you have a solution for, let's say, the iPod version will run very well, whatever audio, whatever video I put in. But currently, for example, let's say on the Kindle Fire or Kindle reading devices, there's a problem. We can't run audio, can't run video.
Yeah, and what we do is gracefully degrade. So if you're going to put out a file that has audio and video, the Kindle will tell you if you had a video-enabled device, you would get video content here, and that's how it adjusts for that. The Kindle Fire doesn't play video yet. We're hopeful it'll play video soon, but the Color Nook plays video, and the iPad plays video, and then Grayscale devices. And I think the platform is. You can either just, it's pretty straightforward, you can either just build two different versions if you really, really don't want any confusion between the two, or just settle for what most people do, which is that the platforms do a good job of differentiating between the video-enhanced content and the fact that if you're reading it on Grayscale, get a video-enhanced device to
Right.
experience that.
So as you know, because I would assume that at this point you guys are pretty experienced and pretty expert in understanding the relationship between consumer, between reader and object, whatever the book might be. I mean, what are you kind of thinking about? I mean, you alluded to, the interest people have in video, and that there is still an argument. Some people I think feel that video is not appropriate for some books. Maybe it is more appropriate for others. But in the experience you've had, which is now fairly broad, how do you think this is going in terms of the reader, not the publisher side, not the creators, but really from the reader side? What have you ascertained that would you say people on the reading side feel about the multimedia experience in the book environment?
I think people tend to overthink it. In a video, I mean, look, I probably read more books than anybody. I've always been a voracious reader. I mean, with the book platform, in a lot of cases, I'm just going to indie presses and getting their PDFs and converting ebooks for them for myself for free in my spare time so I can finally read their books on my Kindle app. Because I mean, that's what powers our company, is a deep commitment to the reading experience. And I just, it's been 3 years of listening to people talk about video and this, and maybe it disrupts or a richer experience. Our experience has been every kind of content has its ideal form, right? I mean, some fiction content, I probably don't want video unless it's a book that's written specifically to incorporate video. I mean, if you've ever read House of Leaves, Mark Danielewski's fantastic horror novel that is kind of hypertext without hypertext, right? Like, it tells you to page through the book to go to different parts to read different experiences. It works exceptionally well because he always envisioned it as being this complicated structure. If you want to put video in for a fitness book, people just love it. I mean, you go on Amazon and the right nonfiction books we've done with video have overwhelming positive reviews. We just did a title called Scan School. Okay, this is a great story. And it's a set of magic tricks by a guy named Brian Brushwood, and he does things like poke nails in his eyes and stuff like that. So he had a podcast, and he just used our platform. We didn't help at all, and he built a video enhanced ebook showing how to perform tricks. And he made some great videos, put it in there, put the book up for sale, alerted his podcast audience. And the guy made $30,000 on this thing in a month with little previous publishing experience and doing it all entirely himself. Now, he'd already built his audience through his podcast. But what he did was he then created a product he knew his audience wanted. And so the way people have to think about this is be doers and not contemplators, not get it out of the theoretical world. Brian knew he had some information that would be enhanced by the addition of video showing how to do a trick. He put together this information in its platonic form, right? Like, the ideal way to consume information about magic tricks, put it out to his audience, and of course, the ideal met the world, and he had a success. So what I it's like anything. If you can achieve the ideal form of your information, you're going to see, you will find an audience for it. That's rather a long-winded answer, but that's the way I think of it.
No, I think that's a good answer. I think it actually, similarly, I saw last year Peter Bayliss of Wiley demonstrated an ebook they'd done there with video. And I think they've done a few, which this one really made it clear to me, and probably to everybody in the audience at his presentation. It was I think it was a dummy's guide to knitting. And of course, if you've ever knitted and you've looked at a book to try to learn how to do a stitch, or you're looking at a two-dimensional picture to try to translate that in your mind into a three-dimensional act. The video is three-dimensional, and you can see exactly how to put, how to knit that particular thing that you're trying to do. So, where it's like cooking. I saw a demo. There was a book on the Nook I got a sample of. It was a cookbook which showed you how to do gold, this thing of, they do gold on chocolate for desserts, for fancy desserts. And, you could read about that in a book, and you could maybe get it from pictures, black and white, or even color stills. But when you see it, you get it. You know, all of a sudden, okay, it's like
Yeah,
why people watch tele, you know, they watch cooking shows on TV, and there is something appropriate, I think, to me, that's the most important word. You know, that if the video content is appropriate to what you're doing with the book, then people will, your readers will respond. You know, they're not looking for you to, it's not a, you're not doing a 30-minute video, because then you can go on iTunes and buy a 30-minute video. You know,
exactly.
you're still a book. But I wish we had better language for this, because it is an evolving mashup of different media. And when, you know, enhanced ebooks doesn't really get across what we're talking about in many cases. And I think also the other thing is that, and maybe you know this, I'll switch to the creator side. I think one of the impediments to seeing more really good ebooks with multimedia features is the lack of experience that people in books have with those other media. When you talk about, you know, your guy who made the videos of magic, I think a lot of people are afraid of video and they don't know how to handle it. You know, it's not so, I mean, in the same way, you know, if you said to somebody, oh, anybody can write a book. Well, we know that's not true. And in the same way, not anybody can make a video that's really good. So I think, you know, maybe that's an evolution for you. I mean, I don't know whether you've been thinking about this, but it would seem you would, that, you know, maybe you'll have to include in your resources, like I come to you with a book and I want to use your platform and I want to put video in, but I don't have any good video. I need you to help me find somebody who can do the video work that I need at a reasonable enough price that I can afford it for my book. Is that
Oh,
something?
exactly. You're dead on, and that's actually something we've now launched a program. We did it on Monday called Bookmasters, and our bookmasters are people who are experts at both ebook building, but we can also hook you up with video creators. And we start out with a free consultation, and people come, they sign up to learn more, and then I just call them up. Obviously, it's the early days here, but we already have a strong network of bookmasters ready to go. So we've already been handing out content and hooking up ready, willing, and eager creators with people who need their services.
Well, I think that's really good. Obviously, I think you know, it's almost like you have to seed the environment so those, you know, flowers and trees will grow, and you know, help. You'll have to end up doing a lot of the landscaping and fertilizing to you know, to help to make it work. So does that apply to audio as well? I mean, if let's say I came to you and I
Oh,
said,
yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
I need somebody to you know, I want to have some music in this book, or I want to do some recorded voice, but I don't have a studio in my office or my home. You know, how do I find somebody who's a good voice actor? You know, these are all things that they're kind of new skills for a publisher. That, and also you're talking about maybe skills that, I mean, we've all, you know, you might be in the publishing business and you might have run across some of these skills, but they're not necessarily resources that you would have at your command.
Yeah, exactly. And that's why we do have, I mean, the advantage for us is that we do have so many connections with people who actually know the ins and outs of doing these things. And that's why you can read, I mean, and that's what's going to happen there. Tina Brown calls it the gig economy. You're going to see this ability of different experts and skilled folks. You know, look at Audible's ACX. I don't know if you're familiar with that, but I always
Yes,
recommend
yep.
people go check. And because it's a great marketplace of people that is making audio more prevalent. I'm really impressed by what they've done there. So, you know, I see more and more of those distributed marketplaces as the internet and these businesses evolve.
Right, it's almost like you end up having a kind of mini Craigslist, you know, in the they have the gig section and the jobs wanted, And I've done things like I needed video for a video, needed an event recorded, so I was making a book trailer, and I needed somebody to record a live event, so I put an ad in Craigslist and got, I think I got 57 replies from really, in almost every case, qualified. I mean, at least out of the 57, I bet 25 of them were right. They were qualified for the job, and there's just a lot of talent out there. And of course, the next level for you probably is to figure out a way of codifying what people's skill sets are, and then you including the feedback. So if you if you hire somebody, that they're good and that they'll deliver on time at a reasonable price, do the things they said they would do. I mean, those are always the things people, we all worry about when we hire someone to work for us. Will they really deliver?
Yeah, exactly. And and I think that the fact is, when you have these freelance and other areas, people begin to rate each other, and they endorse and criticize or comment on it. You hopefully begin to see a higher level. I know this might seem naive, but you begin to see, in the way that the community moderates itself, more high quality connections emerging. I mean, you can see it happening in social. Reddit is a great example of a community that where the moderators, they've been able to scale, but they've been able to handle moderation so that the quality of stuff and the quality of the sort of people they're attracting to comment on their site is really exceptional. And it's kind of the best out there. So I've been impressed, if anything, this is relating to the larger internet, but I think publishing could learn a lesson. I've been impressed by the ability of crowds to organize themselves into fairly intelligent, smart, clever, humorous groups that don't just, as they'd say, always go for the lols on the internet.
Right. Well, let me ask you a question, sort of that leads to, and that is, do you think that there's any way that readers can somehow organize themselves or be organized in such a way as to communicate directly with writers and publishers and providers of books, the kinds of things that they care about that are important to them? I mean, of course they vote with their dollars. Everybody knows that's true, but that's a kind of limited communication, and the internet does afford us a lot more two-way conversations, or three-way, or five-way, or ten-way conversations, where readers can say, I really want more from you in the following area. And of course, yes, they can do that on the product pages for, at Amazon, Barnes and Noble, Kobo, and Apple. We can make comments, although I guess on Apple we just can rate, give rating numbers. But it seems like it almost cries out for, a community-based reader to writer publisher communication method. I don't even know what I'm talking about in terms of imagining what that might
No,
look
I
like.
think no. There's actually some great communities out there now. I'd highlight two for you. There's Jacob Lewis's Figment. I think this is a fantastic company that's kind of doing what you're talking about. Figment's a community for young adult readers and writers, people who do YA stuff, and it's got, I think he's got 200,000 plus engaged users on there, and some crazy, 60% or higher engagement rate. I mean, he's just got exceptional numbers, and it's all based around teens and precocious preteens writing books online and then commenting to each other on them. And something I've noticed there in the past couple of months is that a lot of established writers who write YA stuff are now starting to write on Figment because they know their audience is there. So this was a community that never would have existed. Jacob built it up. Now they're all collected, and they've become something you can begin to develop content for, and you can see what they're interested in. Wattpad's another great example. That's a site where people go and publish their books online and comment on it. And I think I need to, I'm blanking on the specific author, but one author had some millions of page views of her book and was immediately picked up by a major publisher. Well, at the moment, I think publishers often look at these social communities as places where they can go scout the next talent that they're going to select. But what's really happening there, I would wager, is that those communities are soon going to realize they don't necessarily need a publisher to give them the imprimatur of officialness or revenue generation that a publisher brings. And soon those communities, you'll see more and more of them springing up, and they'll begin publishing directly. And I think you're going to see that innovation or that next level in publishing come from that ground level up, where groups of people get to together around things they're excited around and begin to develop content out of it. So, I mean, I think it's a very, it's exceptionally good time to be someone interested in books with the takeoff in ebooks. And, you know, if I was, Seth Godin wrote something recently just saying, if I was a publisher, I'd go out and, you know, just start a bunch of little spin-off startups devoted to generating these communities and start from the ground up. And I think he's dead on.
No, I agree with you completely. I think I've actually thought about that for a number of years, that why, you know, that the what really works, and I think, you know, people have talked about this in all kinds of other contexts, you know, the idea of communities, the idea of verticals. Well, those all those communities and verticals are out there, and there are lots of places where you know, maybe you could start your own, but you could actually just engage with ones that already exist. And publishers who become, I mean, I think famously Bain and Tor, the science fiction publishers, and Harlequin and Carina, all of the romance publishers, they're part of the community. They're not just seen as harvesters of the community for you know, kind of commercial benefit. The people who are in those companies are fans themselves. They are members of communities, and that gives them authenticity and value so that they can create exchange and meaningful exchange between readers and publishers and writers. So I think you're right. I think Seth Godin's right that you know, you'd want to foster more of that kind of meaningful publishing. You know, what it has to be based now on you know, commitment and love, almost, you know, just the passion that I think really that passion is what motivated most publishers in the first place. Whatever that passion is, you know, it might be a passion for a great book, but it might actually be combining that with passion for, you know, raising grapes for wine, or a passion for, you know, knitting. You know, you see this, you know, sort of, again, I love this example of from years ago. A publisher I knew did a book on, an entire book on Bulgarian knitting stitches. I forget even what they were called. I think they were mittens, but they sold 13,000 copies of this book because it was absolutely what a particular community needed and wanted at that time. And
I think what you just said, that's exactly it. And I mean, what I think is so interesting is that idea that it is around passion, and people think I think the passion is sort of the key, because it's kind of what these deep desires that drive people. I mean, there's that great piece on Barney Rossett recently, who founded Grove Press, and it's sort of by his niece, and who he passed away recently. But you know, this seminal publishing press that published Beckett and all these other classic writers. What I thought was so fascinating was what Barney's passion wasn't necessarily for great literature or art. His passion, what seemed to really drive this guy, was being disruptive and scandal. Not necessarily scandal, but sort of breaking down the mores that previously existed. And obviously he loved books, but that was kind of his overall drive. And I think, you know, for people who have an interest in writing, in the written word, they recognize there's no better way to get an idea across often than to write a book. And whether it's Bulgarian knitting or, you know, publishing William Burroughs or publishing a romance novel, whatever this thing is that, to put it a little crudely, turns you on, I think that the realization that books still manage to capture the summation of what that thing is better than almost any other form of media is powerful, and it is why the fact that digital brings books so immediately and quickly to us means that hopefully we've got a golden age for people who love to read coming.
I think that's a good point, and I think that I think is a power to offering tools, because then you're enabling that, you're giving that passion, that passionate person, whether it's a publisher or an author, or for that matter a reader who just found something they think they want to share with everybody else, you're giving them the tools to enable them to bring that passion to bear. And of course, the next step is, converting that passion to some form of meaningful commercial exchange. But, it is also, and maybe you can, here's another question, Kai. I know we don't have a whole lot more time to go, but, it's often, this is a huge argument that we're not going to get into, but, this whole discussion about the less expensive ability, the ability of digital publishing to be less expensive than print publishing. And, I believe that on the pre-printing side of the equation, it actually is not less expensive. It takes just as much time to edit an ebook as it takes to edit a print book. It takes just as much. In fact, it may take more in the kinds of books that your platform allows me to build, because I have to think about multiple media forms. And, I might want to make video, but I've got to not only envision the video, almost like a movie producer does, I've got to then have a director make it, or if somebody with a camera make it. If there's audio, I've got to record it. I mean, you could argue that, in fact, what you're creating is a series of tools that might enable me as a publisher to spend more time creating a book than I would just in a print format. Because I've got to master potentially three, maybe four different media in order to do a good product. And of course, now we might do a shorter version. I mean, my book in this e-form may not be 100,000 words. It might only be 30 or 40,000 words, or it could even be 10,000 words. But still, I guess the question then, and I may be even answering my own question, I don't mean to do this, but do you agree that in fact, while you are creating this big opportunity, it still is true that the software component of the work, which is the editorial, is really, you still have to spend time and do a really important, you have to do a really good job, or else it won't work.
Yeah, I think you still have to spend a lot of time. But again, I think you have to tie it to the content. If you're doing a short form, there's a sense that, you look at that 50 Shades of Grey, which took off so compellingly and made so much money as a self-published title. And when you read it, I mean, the grammatical and copy editing errors in that thing were pretty pronounced. And also just sometimes the flubs that an editor would catch. So I'm a huge believer in this marketplace of editors and copywriters that will come together to always guarantee you'll have higher and higher quality work. But at the same time, I think there is more room for following your own vision instead of feeling like something has to be perfect before it's released. And that's just, I mean, especially when what you're finding on with these Kindles, especially the way Amazon's opened up that opportunity for individual authors to get out there, is how much people will tolerate in terms of not the most well-written book ever when it comes to a great story or something they really want to read.
I wonder about that in the long term. And again, as I said, we could go on talking about this for a really long time.
Oh yeah.
I really wonder whether, and your word choice, I think, is absolutely right. Tolerate. You wonder how long readers will tolerate poor work before it degrades their experience and makes it less likely that they will want to spend money. If you said to me you could buy a really crappy book for $2 or a really good book for $5, and of course no two books are identical, but I most of the time I'm gonna spend the $5 because I know that my time is limited, and if I spend $2 and have a really terrible experience, I'm gonna be unhappy. And time matters to me enough that I'd rather spend a little bit more. And it's not like I'm saying you have to spend $100 to get a good book and $5 for a terrible book, because the difference, amortized out over a whole bunch of readers, may only come down to a couple of bucks per book.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that what's so interesting is people are willing to spend for, perhaps less than what would seem to be premium quality content. And immediately, that's where what's going to happen is that these quick, very responsive, lean, innovative publishers are going to start coming out who will be able to bring a higher gloss of quality to works like something like 50 Shades of Grey. I know it's already been picked up and is being reissued, but they'll bring a higher gloss of quality to stuff, but they'll maintain that sort of grittiness, that's not the right word, that sort of immediacy that I think self-publishing takes advantage of.
No, I think that's good. Well, I wish we had more time because this turned out to be very interesting. I think we talked about a lot of really important issues, and I'm really glad we had a chance to talk. So thanks for doing this, Matt.
Absolutely.
It's been
Thanks for
fun.
talking to me. I really appreciate it.
Sure. This has
Yeah,
been
thank you.
Publishing Talks, a podcast about the publishing industry. I've been talking to Matt Kavnar, VP of Business Development for VOOK, which is V as in Victor, OOK. You can find them at VOOK.com. And having used the platform a little bit in a sort of demo mode, I can say that I think it is really an interesting, and I think will be a very powerful tool set. So thanks, Matt.